Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, does this song really seem that controversial to you? On the Scoot on the Air Rock Culture calendar, on this day in 1985, the Parents Music Resource Center held a meeting in Washington at a church where they just start to build their support for their agenda, a rating system for albums and concerts and things that you see in the movies, just like there are in the movies. They wanted the same kind of thing for concerts and for albums. And they wanted to keep offensive album covers covered up in the record stores. Their efforts led to warning stickers on albums with offensive lyrics. Do you think that really worked? I mean, if you were a kid back then, did that work? Did that turn out to be an effective way to keep albums away from you, to keep music away from you? I don't think it really worked very well. You know who was also involved in this effort? Tipper Gore, who I thought was, you know, she was kind of cute. She was the wife of Senator Al Gore and the mother of four, and she got really upset when her 11-year-old daughter was playing the Prince song, Darlin' Nikki. And, it's a song of questionable nature, and she caught her daughter listening to it. She got really, really upset. But, you know, I didn't mind those labels being on the albums that had offensive language. That's okay. But I don't know that it really kept the albums away from some kids. I mean, if you were part of that generation that was affected by this, did your parents actually keep you from listening to some music, and did it work? I mean, I'd love to hear from you. The Oakenheart Jewelers talk and text line is 504-260-1870. Also, this hour, I'll share with you, or maybe it'll be next hour, but this afternoon I'm going to share with you some comments about something we posted on WWL.com. It's about a really dumb question we had on the air yesterday, and you can go there and check it out. And it's an introduction to a link from the show yesterday, and it's this caller that had a really dumb question. And what's scary is that there are a lot of people out there who just don't know. They don't get it. And maybe I should have more empathy for those who are just challenged to really understand the basics of politics, the basics of the topics that we talk about. So anyway, check that out. It's also posted on Scoot on the Air Facebook and Instagram, and I'll get to some of your comments, if not this hour for sure, next hour. Also coming up later this hour, we'll talk about this traveling museum, the history of failures. And it's kind of interesting to think back on some of these failures. And I remember some of these products that came out, and they were total failures. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But let's take a look at Scoot's news briefs. In a new era of war-torn Syria, the president of the United States is ready to help them get back on their feet.
President Donald Trump says he'll move to normalize relations and lift sanctions on Syria's new government to give the country a chance at peace.
That's why my administration has already taken the first steps toward restoring normal relations between the United States and Syria for the first time in more than a decade.
Trump is set to meet with Syrian President Ahmed al-Sharaa Wednesday. Al-Sharaa led the overthrow of former leader Bashar Assad. Then President Joe Biden left the decision to recognize the new Syrian government up to Trump, the president announced in Riyadh.
I will be ordering the cessation of sanctions against Syria in order to give them a chance at greatness.
The developments are a major boost for the Syrian president, who at one point was imprisoned in Iraq. Al-Sharaa is set to become the first Syrian leader to meet an American president since the late Hafez Assad met Bill Clinton in Geneva in 2000. I'm Haya Pinjwani.
Yeah, that would be interesting. And I'm sure as a developer, I'm sure the president would look at maybe some kind of a hotel and golf resort. And with all of the areas that have been bombed, those would be natural bunkers on the golf course. So, you know, it's going to be interesting.
Aleppo. A little fixer-upper.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's right there.
Well, it's a big divot. You know, I mean, giant hole here. Well, that's your bunker. You know? Yeah, all right. The president also is pursuing a new state of relations with one of the Middle East's most hostile governments.
In Saudi Arabia, President Trump is pushing for a new nuclear deal with Iran. The president spoke just days after sending a special envoy, Steve Witkoff, to meet with Iranian officials for a fourth round of talks aimed at persuading Iran to abandon its nuclear program. He says the Iranian regime should have focused on building their nation up instead of tearing the region down.
Yet I'm here today not merely to condemn the past chaos of Iran's leaders, but to offer them a new path and a much better path toward a far better and more hopeful future.
The president said he wants to avoid conflict with Tehran.
But if Iran's leadership rejects this olive branch and continues to attack their neighbors, then we will have no choice but to inflict massive maximum pressure,
which would mean driving Iranian oil exports to zero. I'm Ed Donahue.
All right, back home in the United States, the president's economic agenda is producing mixed results. I mean, there's some good news, but he's also facing a lot of opposition from his own party.
Senator Rand Paul says resistance to President Donald Trump's trade wars has sprung up in Kentucky from a cross-section of business sectors. He's heard concerns from agriculture, the auto sector, bourbon producers, home builders, and package shippers.
And adding a huge tax in the middle of the system and higher for some countries and lower for others, and then you lobby to try to get an exemption. So I don't think it's a good way to run the government.
Even with the current truce, tariffs are still higher than before Trump started ramping them up last month. While Senator Paul is among the few GOP lawmakers who have challenged Trump on tariffs, he does add that.
I said I'll be the first person to compliment President Trump if the end of this shakes out and in 6 months all the tariffs are lower and there's more trade. I'm perfectly willing and big enough to say, good job, Mr. President.
I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Yeah, and I'll do the same thing. More disruptions at one of the nation's busiest airports yesterday. There were only 3 air traffic controllers on duty, where there should be 14. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy blamed software left behind by Joe Biden.
The Biden Buttigieg FAA bungled this move without properly hardening the telecom lines feeding the data, which was already well known to be air prone. Without addressing the underlying infrastructure, they added more risk to the system.
I wonder why it's not everywhere. I mean, if it's the software, then wouldn't that be almost everywhere? And the other problem is, I mean, it may be the software. He may be right. But also, if there are only 3 air traffic controllers when there should be 14, that's a problem. Duffy says the only solution right now is to simply reduce the number of flights.
And if we reduce the number of flights at Newark, we're not doing it to annoy people. We're not doing it to delay people's travel. What we're doing is guaranteeing safety. And when you have problems, you actually slow things down. And that's what we've done. We've slowed down the flights at Newark until we can stand this system up and be assured that we have enough controllers and a system that's actually working to keep everybody safe.
What's the bottom line of these air traffic controllers walking out? Ian, do you know? Is it a strike? Are they striking? Or are they not happy?
I think it's a difficult job to hire for because it's incredibly technically skilled. Yeah. But also, it's pretty emotionally high stakes. I think the kind of person that wants to be an air traffic controller is the same kind of person that wants to be a cop or wants to be a firefighter, wants to be in the military. It takes a very sort of hardened person to deal with such a high stakes job, and the sort of intersection of that, you know, the very technical aspect of it, and then also it being something that's really stressful.
Right.
There just aren't that many of them. And I think we just haven't done enough as a country. And I don't think it's right to blame this on any one president, but there just haven't been enough. There has not been enough attention paid to the needs of our nation's aviation infrastructure insofar as we do not have enough air traffic controllers.
But it seems like there was a gutting of the FAA. Did that did that involve the air traffic controllers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In the first couple of weeks when Doge was just swinging around that chainsaw, they fired a bunch of these people.
Yeah.
And then, you know what they did? Maybe I'm getting this mixed up with another agency. I think they knew well enough to not fire the actual air traffic controllers. They fired all their support staff.
Okay.
So it's like, ah, we're looking for efficiencies at WWL. So we fired Ian and Jordan and Charlie and Steve and Danny and, you know, Newell and Scoot and Tommy and Bobby and Mike D. They're all still there, but their support staff is gone.
Yeah, well, that might cause air traffic controllers to walk off the job because they don't have the support staff. So anyway, yeah, I guess there's more to be learned about all of that. So Sean Diddy Combs' ex-girlfriend, Cassie Ventura, is testifying today in his sex trafficking trial.
Cassie Ventura is Sean Diddy Combs' ex-girlfriend and the government star witness. The R&B singer was already seen by the jury in an explosive video being punched, kicked, and dragged by Combs in a hotel hallway. Now she will tell the panel of eight men and four women about that night and the many other days and nights she spent with Combs. Prosecutors charged him with sex trafficking and racketeering, saying Combs compelled women, including Cassie, to take drugs and engage in sexual activity with male escorts while he gratified himself, charges he denies. The defense points to Cassie's lawsuit against Combs, saying she demanded $30 million, giving her millions of reasons to lie. At court in Manhattan, I'm Julie Walker.
Wow. I don't understand how men can treat women like that. I know sometimes you come across a woman and you really hate her and she's done some bad things to you, but I don't see how that can happen. CBS legal reporter Katrina Kaufman has a little bit more to say about Cassie Ventura's courtroom appearance.
She has started to testify about the abusiveness in their relationship and the sexual proclivities that he introduced her to, like voyeurism and something that he called freak-offs, where she would get male escorts or he would get male escorts and they would engage in sex acts for anything from hours to days. She also talks about how their relationship became violent and she didn't know which side of calm she would get in the morning. At one point saying that she didn't know if she made the wrong face, if he would hit her in the face.
Man, when did this guy have time to make music? Wow. All right, that's it for a look at Scoot's news briefs. We're going to get to some of your text messages coming up, and I want to start talking about this traveling museum. We're going to talk about some of the great failures in American history. This is part of a museum that is on the second floor of the Madame Tussauds Wax Museum at Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco. Now it's traveling around. You know, we celebrate victories, so we're now talking about celebrating failures. It'd be an interesting conversation. All right, on the Scoot on the Air Rock Culture Calendar, it was on this day in 1978 that Night Fever had been number one. This song by the Bee Gees was number one in the country. And it was number one for 8 weeks. 8 weeks at number one. I mean, 1978, disco ruled the charts. And it, ruled my social life as well, because this is when we were going to the gay bars in the quarter to, you know, dance to great disco music. All right, so this song was replaced at number one by this song. Night Fever was replaced by this song at number one on the Hot Billboard Hot 100 charts. Another song from Saturday Night Fever. So Night Fever was replaced by Yvonne Elliman, If I Can't Have You, another song from the soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever. All right. Again, if you want to join us with a comment about anything we talk about, the Open Heart Jewelers talk and text line is 504-260-1870. It really is a very nice, beautiful Tuesday afternoon, but last night was so pleasant. Yesterday morning was so pleasant. I walk out this morning and I'm starting to feel it, the heat and the humidity. It's coming. I'm not happy. I'm Scoot. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
On the Scoot on the Air Rock Culture Calendar, it was on this day in 2017 that Todd Rundgren gave a commencement speech at Berklee College of Music where he said, "I have never been nominated, thankfully, for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. If nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve." Well, he was inducted in 2021, and he made good on his promise. He didn't show up. I don't know. That's a little tacky. You know, you get nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think you should show up. All right, I want to talk about this new traveling museum. I don't know if it's going to come here or not. There's a Museum of Failure on the second floor of the former Madame Tussauds Wax Museum at Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco. And what this museum does is it celebrates failures. And there have been a lot of failures in our society. You know, you hear about the products that make it big and companies make millions and billions of dollars. But sometimes we don't hear about the failures because they don't last very long. For example, did you know that in 1982, Colgate introduced a frozen dinner that was named Colgate Lasagna? It had the Colgate toothpaste logo on it. Now, you know, are you supposed to brush your teeth with it? Are you supposed to eat it? I mean, this was a terrible, terrible mistake. You know, when it comes to marketing, when it comes to line extension, when a company extends into another line that is different from their original product, you really have to be careful. And man, Colgate really, really blew it. And, you know, you would think that they would have some really bright people around them, but this was a huge, huge mistake. It was a big failure. You know, you think about Colgate, you think about brushing your teeth, not lasagna and Swedish meatballs, but they had the Colgate logo on the lasagna dinner. So that didn't work. Also, Alito from Starbucks didn't last very long. This was a combination of coffee and olive oil, and it came out in 2023. It didn't last very long because a lot of people were getting stomach problems because both coffee and olive oil have laxative properties. So a lot of people suddenly had to go to the bathroom, and they had to go very, very badly and very quickly. And so that didn't, I mean, who thought to put olive oil with coffee? I mean, even from a taste standpoint, it doesn't sound very good. But anyway, that didn't last very long. There was a hip swiveling Hawaii chair that didn't last on the market very long. There are also some cities that were listed as failures in the history of failures. Helsingborg, Sweden in 2017, and Budapest, Hungary last year. Gee, I'm surprised the city of New Orleans didn't make it. Right now, Cybertruck is being listed as a product that didn't make it. In 1995, I don't know, see if you remember this, Ian. 1995, do you remember Lifesaver Soda?
No.
It was a soda.
That's bizarre.
It was a soda flavored like Lifesavers. It was like liquid candy. And they had taste tests with focus groups, and it went well, but it didn't stay on the market very long. In 1979, NBC had a series called Super Train. The series was set aboard a nuclear-powered train that traveled between New York and Los Angeles at 200 miles an hour. The series required a model super train to be built at a cost of $3 million. It crashed on the first demonstration.
Oh, no.
The series was canceled after nine episodes. All right, 1975.
Wait, you know it's science fiction when we could have a high-speed train between New York and Los Angeles. Not in this country.
You know it. In 1975, this is long before your time, but I remember this. There was a big battle between Betamax and VHS.
Oh, I know all about it.
What did you buy? Sony introduced Betamax videotape players on this, not on this day, but in 1975. And Betamax battled VHS. And, you know, Betamax really had superior resolution and better sound quality. And I was torn. Like, the cool people had Betamax. I had VHS. I don't know why I decided to go to VHS. But Betamax went from 100% of the VCR market in 1975 to 10% in 1988 and disappeared soon after that.
Man, people still had Betamax at home in 1988? 10%?
I'm surprised.
That's wild.
Remember Sega?
Yes.
Sega. Didn't make, I mean, Sega was a gaming console launched in 1999, but PlayStation...
Wait, Sega what? Dreamcast?
the Sega game thing.
Well, there's Sega Genesis.
Well, I don't know what game there is. It's just the gaming thing.
We'll read the rest of it.
The gaming console. No, this is just something. These are just notes I made.
Oh, okay.
Everything I'm giving you now are notes that I made about failures beyond the Traveling Museum, because that article didn't have everything, and I just, on my own, did a little research and came up with some things that failed. But ultimately, Sega failed to PlayStation. And lost out to, I guess, Nintendo as well.
Yeah, that would have been the Sega Dreamcast, which somebody with more information would be able to say more about this, but there had to be some reason that the Sega Dreamcast could not compete with the Sony PlayStation.
Yeah, but Sega
and
was
a little
big,
bit later, the first
name.
Xbox. Yeah,
I mean, I remember hearing Sega.
No, Sega Genesis was very competitive with the other consoles at the time, but then they rolled out the Dreamcast. I think it just didn't have enough good games, probably.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
1992, Crystal Pepsi was introduced. Heavily promoted. They spent millions promoting this. It was a liquid that was clear, but it was still a cola. And I remember this, and you know what? It was caffeine-free. It was promoted as being healthier, but it was clear. And, you know, when I want a cola, I want it to be dark.
I mean, I remember drinking Crystal Pepsi out of cans. And it's like, if you're drinking out of a can, what the hell difference does it make what color it is?
It doesn't.
And you know what? There's a lot of problems with Pepsi. None of them are solved by it being transparent rather than, like the usual brown color.
You know, in the Northeast, Pepsi is preferred over Coke. Pepsi is really popular in the Northeast.
That's
but
psychotic.
A lot of other places, Pepsi
I don't know.
Ain't real popular.
Can't explain everything.
Anyway, Crystal Pepsi lasted 2 years. McDonald's biggest failure was the Arch Deluxe Hamburger, introduced in 1996. Do you remember this?
I remember the Arch Deluxe.
I don't remember this. It was promoted as the more gastronomic burger with a grown-up taste. McDonald's spent $200 million in advertising. It was listed as a fast food that their time had come, but it didn't last very long. It was pretty quickly discontinued. Maxwell House brewed coffee introduced in 1990. It came in a milk-type carton that had a picture of a hot coffee mug on it, but it was supposed to be kept in the refrigerator.
Hmm.
The carton was lined with foil, so you couldn't microwave it. It was discontinued shortly after its release. I mean, think about the people involved in these products, and you think about the research and all the marketing people, and some of these people have got to be really bright. It's amazing that they made so many mistakes. Kellogg's Breakfast Mates, introduced in 1998, a breakfast food, an all-in-one package, one serving of cereal, a small carton of milk, and a plastic spoon. It was designed to save time for the busy family. The New York Times did a controlled test and discovered that the all-in-one Breakfast Mates saved 1 second over the traditional way of making cereal.
If your family is so busy that you don't have time to pour milk into a bowl with cereal, I think you've got bigger problems than the cereal that you're picking.
Boy, you're right about that.
Saying?
The all-in-one package.
And just to be clear, I'm not making light of anybody who's got a very, many children, and they've got to figure out how to feed them and get them clothed and on the way out to school and everything. But the bulk of the time spent on cereal is eating it, not pouring it.
Right. And look, if you're going to put out a product that's supposed to be easier than doing it the traditional way, it better save more time than 1 second.
Better actually be easier. Yes.
1 second.
And I'm sure it was, $6 for a serving of cereal and milk. Get out of here.
In 1998, Frito-Lay introduced Wow Chips, a snack, made with the fat substitute Olestra.
Olestra.
Marketed as a healthy alternative to regular chips.
No.
347 million in sales the first year, greater than any other product in 1998. But when people started feeling the effects of the Olestra, it's documented the sales plummeted. The effects were diarrhea and cramps.
Leakage.
And the FDA...
If I recall.
The FDA required a warning label of abdominal cramping and loose stools. By 2000, sales were dropping. It was discontinued. And who can forget The 1957 Ford Edsel.
The Edsel.
Yeah. Aggressive marketing. The car of the future. There was nothing futuristic about it. It was expensive and ugly as hell. Had that oval, vertical radiator. That was a radiator.
That was bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, Ford stopped production 2 years later, lost an estimated $350 million on the Edsel.
Oh, in 1957 dollars? That's got to be...
Counting
for inflation, that's a lot of money.
Easy Squirt, introduced by Heinz in 2000.
Excuse me?
Ketchup.
Oh, yeah.
Easy Squirt. What color's ketchup?
It's red. Ketchup
red.
Is red.
Ketchup is red. Well, they were trying to attract more kids who make up the biggest group that consumes ketchup. So Easy Squirt was ketchup that was purple, green, and blue, and they matched the color inside with the color of the bottle, and it didn't make it. I mean, once the novelty wore off, Heinz discontinued it. But, you know, I mean, honestly, you know, some things don't need to be changed. You know, even if you're a kid, I mean, ketchup just needs to be red.
Yeah, and... that it invites a broader conversation about ketchup. Ketchup is kind of unimprovable in many ways, which is why you don't really see many varieties of it. You know, I mean, sure, different manufacturers, like you can get Heinz or you can get Rouse's or whatever, but there aren't so many different kinds of ketchup as there are of mustard. You know, yellow mustard or honey mustard or spicy mustard or Creole mustard. People just want ketchup.
Yep,
Stop trying to improve ketchup.
That's right.
Ketchup gonna ketchup. Leave it alone.
Yeah, and you know, look, I have mixed mayonnaise and ketchup in the past to make that mix. I mean, mayonnaise and ketchup is a... Yeah, but I'll do it myself. I'm not going to go buy a mixed bottle of it. All right, this is a beauty. 1994, Harley-Davidson introduced perfumes and cologne. Introduced by Harley-Davidson as a masculine smell. What is it? Smells like a motorcycle? The slogan was, ride hard, smell good. A fragrance made of wooded glades with a hint of tobacco.
Mm.
Here was the...
Wooded glades.
Here was the copy. It makes you feel like the manliest man out there with a fragrance of amber, ginger, sandalwood, leather, cinnamon, and cedarwood. Whether you ride motorcycles yourself or just like them, this cologne is for you. It came out in 94, discontinued in 1997. I went online, and you can still buy a bottle of Harley-Davidson cologne, 3.4 ounces. It's $110 or best offer. I don't know. Harley-Davidson, stick with motorcycles. There need not be a Harley-Davidson cologne or a Harley-Davidson perfume. If you can think of something that was a huge failure that we haven't mentioned and you want to join us, I'd love to hear from you. The Oakenheart Jewelers talk and text line is 504-260-1870. So I guess we dedicate this song to all of these things that we're talking about from the History Museum of Failures. I'm going to make a prediction about something else that may fail that is being sold right now. It's the new Volkswagen bus. It's like the new Volkswagen van bus. Look, I test drove one of those. It's really cool. I mean, it has an aisle down the middle. I love it. The side windows in the back, they slide backwards. The problem is it's electric and it doesn't go that far on one charge. The other big problem is it's $73,000. It looks cool as hell. I mean, I loved it. I drove it. I mean, I thought it was awesome. But at that price, I don't think it's going to make it. I'm Scoot. We'll be right back on WWL.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
On the Scoot on the Air Rock Culture calendar, it was on this day in 2002, Dionne Warwick was arrested at Miami's International Airport for possessing marijuana. Screeners found 11 marijuana joints inside a lipstick container. The charges were dropped after she does an anti-drug public service announcement. You know, if you're a celebrity, have you noticed that you really get off easy if you get busted for drugs? I mean, I think all you have to do is, like, man, offer, like, some backstage passes and tickets to the concert. Or you offer to do an anti-drug public service announcement and you get off. Now, look, I don't think having marijuana is a big deal. But, I mean, it's kind of a surprise, Dionne Warwick. I mean, please don't tell me Dionne Warwick did drugs. All right, we've got some calls to get to, so we'll get to those calls here in just a moment. I want to mention Bill Belichick's girlfriend, Jordan Hudson. She came in third place in the Miss Maine USA pageant. And Bill Belichick is going to be interviewed Friday on Good Morning America. And I wonder if Jordan Hudson, his girlfriend, is going to be there. Because if she's there, you know it's going to be a circus. I don't know if she's going to be there. And now there's talk that because of her interference, he could lose his job at the University of North Carolina. You know, I don't know. You know, we're going to do a quick text off next hour. Does Bill Belichick at 73 with a 24-year-old girlfriend, does he look silly or does he look like a stud? Because it's one or the other. We'll do that next hour. Let's go to Gregory and Metairie. Hey, Gregory.
Hey, man. I don't know if he looks like a stud, but hey, you know, if I was his age.
Look, you know, I don't know, but there's just such a difference. I mean, I've had girlfriends a lot younger than me, but we look like we go together more than he looks like he goes with this girl, and it just doesn't look like she would be with him if he didn't have status and money.
I'm going to say this: it's none of our business.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Right,
but it's fun to talk about.
It's none of our. It is. It is fun to talk about, and that's your corner of the realm, talking about stuff. I want to talk about Todd Rundgren.
Okay.
Todd Rundgren was very, very good about, not only did he write some of the most beautiful love songs, do you know how many records he produced? I mean, Scoot.
No, I don't know. Many. Many, but I don't know how many.
Oh, hundreds and hundreds.
Yeah, he was a very big producer.
Bands that he turned into great bands, and he also had a side act. If you ever get a chance, you probably heard of it. He did a tribute to the Beatles, and it was called Deface the Music. And if you listen to that record, you'll see the brilliance of Todd Rundgren's production. Back this is before digital now. This is all analog stuff. So you or Ian, look up that album, Deface the Music, by his side band, Utopia.
Okay.
You know, Todd Rundgren has another band, Utopia. It's brilliant.
Yeah,
it's fun. It's upbeat. It's really cool.
All right. I'll check that out.
And between you and me, I don't think that Trump, as crazy as I think he is sometimes, is going to accept that airplane. This is just, you know, he's just shaking things up. I mean, I'm an optimist. And I think he's going to do good stuff. And I didn't want to talk about Trump because you promised you wouldn't yesterday, but you did it all day yesterday.
Well, anyway. I really hope that, I hope he does the right thing, Gregory, and that would be not to accept the plane. But I think it's going to be really difficult for him to deny himself accepting this because we know a lot about his personality, and this is the kind of stuff he loves. Tom is in Covington. Hey, Tom, you're on WWL.
Hey, Scoot. I wanted to comment on the VHS beta thing.
Yeah.
The reason, at least as I understand it, and I saw it, you know, on the program talking about it, the porn industry started putting out videos with VHS.
Hmm.
And I don't know if they chose not to go beta or beta refused to do it or whatever, but that's what happened. VHS rentals and sales and stuff just ballooned, and beta got left in the dust.
Tom, I've got to get to a break here. I'm glad you brought that up. It's interesting. But see, that, I mean, you know, that might have inspired a lot of people, but it didn't inspire me because, you know, I mean, I've seen porn, but, I wasn't buying, you know, porn videos. But I went with a VHS. All right, got to get to a break here because we have got the text off coming up. On the SOTA rock culture calendar, on this day in 1958, Jerry Lee Lewis was granted a divorce from his second marriage 6 months after marrying his 14-year-old cousin Myra. Man, that guy was a clown, wasn't he? Got his divorce from his second wife 6 months after he married his 14-year-old cousin. I'm Scoot. We'll be back on WWL.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.